Hello and welcome to Cypher Uncut, a podcast for developers about building great products. Today, I'm excited to welcome Janet Gregory. Janet, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Can you just go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. I was one of those people that went to university late in life. So I graduated university just a little bit before I was 40, but I took computer science. And so I spent the first 6 years, I guess, being a programmer. And then one day my boss came to me and he said, "So Janet, we really need to start a test team because the quality of our product is not great. You are the only developer who complains constantly about the process and that we could do better. Would you please be our QA manager?" So I thought long and hard about it, and I took the job, and I promptly went out and learned everything I possibly could about testing. And turns out that I actually had a really good base for testing, which is why I was complaining all the time. Because my very first job out of university, my supervisor at the time, every day he would come in and say, "So Janet, what are you going to work on today?" So new programmer right out of university. And he'd say, "What are you going to work on today?" So I would tell him what my newest assignment was. We weren't agile or anything else. And at the end of every day before I left, he would come back and he'd say, "So Janet, what did you do today? How did you test that?" So he started the morning, "What are you going to work on?" But he also asked the question, "How are you going to test this?" Because we didn't have testers. So that idea of testing was built in at the very beginning of my programming career. So I was very fortunate. So when I became QA manager for this company, other company, I went out and I took some formal courses. I, you know, got my QA manager certification and all kinds of other things. But at a heart, I found out I was a tester. That's really where my love was. And the company wasn't a good fit. They really didn't care about changing their processes. I found that out. When I left that company, I was very careful about what company I went to next. And so I interviewed the development manager. We interviewed each other, I should say. And one of his questions to me was, "What do you know about extreme programming?" And I said, "Not a lot. I've done a little bit of reading on it, but I don't know much about it." And so we kind of played with it together. And as it turned out, I learned years later, we did a pretty good job about what we were doing, even though we really didn't know what we were doing. But we really focused on the collaboration. And so it worked really well. We were working on an embedded product. So it worked. The collaboration between testers and developers was a good thing. But my next job, I went in as a tester on an agile team. And the team was made up of, half of it was from ThoughtWorks. They were implementing Agile, and half of it was from the company itself. So I was the sole tester on a team with 10 to 12 programmers. And the very first day, one of the developers came to me and said, "So Janet, you're our new tester. We're doing XP. We do all our own testing. What are you going to do?" And so I kind of stopped and I said, "Well, you know what? I'm really not sure. So let's figure it out together." And that was when I met, because I went on to the web and I sent an email to Brian Merrick saying, because he was the only person I knew that was in testing and Agile at the same time. And he pointed me to Lisa Crispin. And after that, things just went along. I joined several other teams along the way, acting as tester, sometimes test lead, sometimes coach, most often as a combination of kind of a coach helping bring Agile in, but from a testing perspective. So when Lisa and I wrote our first book in 2009, we had been collaborating in presentations and talking for a long time, since about 2002. And so we wanted to share all the things that we had learned. And at that point, that's when I kind of changed my business model. And instead of working on teams, I started consulting and training. But it gave me an opportunity to see lots of different teams, how they were, big ones, little ones, all kinds of different industries. And it's been quite a ride along the way. And I've had a lot of fun doing it.
Microservices architecture is all the rage these days. But do you know what it really means and how to implement it to empower your teams to make the best decision for the problem at hand? On the Semaphore blog, you can learn about microservices and how to take advantage of features like test reports, monorepo, and Docker support to build, test, and deploy your microservice application at scale. Head over to semaphoreci.com/blog for more information. And happy reading.
Great. Thanks for giving this great overview. And as you were speaking about this, I was thinking about the timeline as you were presenting this. You know, I was imagining what was happening at what point in time. But as you gave us this 2009, as you said, once you wrote your first book. So maybe just that period contrasted with today. My career is much shorter, but I, for instance, know that culture of testing has improved in the last 10 years. I was lucky, as you also said, that the first technology stack that we picked was like Ruby on Rails, and Ruby being, you know, interpreted language, and you don't know until it runs and all of that. That also, combined with many other things that time, led to TDD, BDD being part of the process from very early on. And I was lucky that in first couple of years of my career, I was converted to, you know, write the test, think about how you're going to test it. And, you know, so I think the testing culture has improved over time. That's my perception, but I'm also heavily biased by people that I'm speaking to as our customers, and majority of them are very technically mature. So they have a test suite, which is, you know, running and all of that. I'm very eager to hear from you. How do you see that trajectory in terms of, you know, testing culture and then that intersection between, you know, agile and, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, what was the trajectory? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. That very first job that I was talking about, out of university, I had to learn to write COBOL. Never took it, but my first 2 years was actually the Vancouver Stock Exchange working on their clearing system. So it was an important system to work on. We couldn't lose money, but we were writing it in COBOL. So there were no unit tests. There were none of those. We had to make sure it worked first, right? You can't just put it in. And I think that place had a tremendous testing culture, which meant when I went to the next place that did not, it was a shock to my system. And there's a lot of companies out there that say they have a testing culture, but they don't. And I don't know if I've seen a trajectory on a better testing culture. What I think has happened is that developers are becoming more aware of testing. I no longer see, which did happen, the whole idea of the pizza under the door. I don't know if you remember that, but we used to say that. Developers, don't talk to them. They were the most important people. Just slide the pizza under the door and let them do their coding. And I don't see that much anymore. Every once in a while, I see few companies that have that same idea. Don't interrupt the developers because, you know, they're too important. Most companies in the last 5 years, maybe a little bit longer, don't have that attitude anymore. They're viewing developers as part of the team, and it takes the whole team to make a quality product. You can't treat them as separate. And I think that that is a trend I've been seeing, the more cross-functional, the more collaborative focus.
That's great. that's the first step, talking, understanding each other, yeah, how to make something together, exactly.
And that's not always easy.
Yes. Not at all. And you mentioned testing culture, that people are saying that, yes, we are the company that, yeah, that has that testing culture, but sometimes that ends up not being the case. How would you describe the testing culture that you would like to see? Let's say that you are, again, joining a team company and you would love that culture to be there and present. Maybe how would you interview the person that's interviewing you?
Well, I've been very fortunate that I've been on a few teams. I often ask people when I'm giving a talk or training or something, I'll say, how many people have felt the magic of being on an agile team? And people, it's fun to watch because the people who know what I'm talking about and have felt the magic, their arms shoot up immediately. And then there's some people that their arm kind of goes up slowly and it stays about half raised. They're not real sure they can see benefits, but they wouldn't call it magic. And then there's people that look at me like, are you crazy, lady? what are you talking about? They have no idea. So when I talk about the magic, it is, it's when that collaboration happens, when at the very beginning of a feature being introduced, the team is introduced to it, and you have whoever it is that needs to be in that group, and you're talking about testing risks, you're talking about product risks, you're talking about how to mitigate it, you're talking about how are we going to do it. You start talking from the very beginning so that people share that picture, the big picture of what we're going to build. People are asking, what problem are we trying to solve? They're looking at it and thinking together. It's not, you know, two people go off and figure it out and come and tell everybody else. And then I know that you talked with Lisa Crispin in a podcast a little while ago about our holistic testing model. And when you're looking at that, is that's kind of discovery. Where are we looking? Can we plan it together so that we think about how are we going to test this at the very beginning? How are we going to address these risks so that you can decide whether or not you have to do performance testing or load testing or recovery, all of those quality attributes that we tend to forget about. And what I see a lot of times in agile teams these days is they focus on the functional, right? So if you're doing acceptance test driven development or BDD, you're focusing on the functional. What do we have to build? But it starts before that, looking at the quality attributes, the risks. And so I think when that magic happens is when the team is on that journey all the way right from the beginning of a new feature and then takes it right to production and really understands what's going on and how our customers are using it. I think that's what happens when you feel the magic. There is no throw it over the wall. We've got testers who will test it.
Claire, as you were mentioning quality attributes and risks, would you say that verifying is what we have just built? Is it solving the problem?
Yeah, and I really don't like that word verifying, but that's because that's my own personal, it's history. But so quality attributes, when we talk about risks, so let's take an example. Our risk is, and I worked for a stock exchange one time. A couple of times, but the most important thing that we had to do, our biggest risk was we could not lose an order or a trade. That was our number one. We could not do that. So our biggest risk was what happens in case of a failure. So we planned an awful lot of how are we going to test recovery? How are we going to have that hot backup? I wish we had the tools that are available today. Then we didn't. But we planned it from the very beginning. So we were verifying that indeed, if we pulled the plug, we still wouldn't lose a trade or an order. But we had to plan for it because we had to know how could we measure that we had every order and every trade in our queue, that we didn't lose them. And if you don't plan for those things, then you will never know how to measure them when you're doing your test. Does that make a little sense?
Absolutely. And is the word measure what we would use instead of verify?
Possibly. And I think that would be dependent on what you were doing. Yeah. My little pet peeve is I used to have so many arguments, and I just don't use those words anymore, between the difference between validation and verification.
Ah, okay.
And so I just find it easier not to even talk about them because they get into philosophical wars almost, right? We need to make sure it works, however we do that, whether we're measuring, whether we're doing a checkbox, it doesn't matter. We need to make sure it works.
Yeah, yeah. A bit of a different domain. At universities, I studied computer hardware, that hardware design, and then they have that verification process. So they call it like, and that term is actually not used in our domain.
No, but they have a very specific thing when you're verifying hardware. It has to meet certain criteria. It has to be within, you know, it's that control thing. It needs to be able to do it. So that is a correct term, and that's the way to use verification, right? It needs to pass those things. So I've been involved in that a little bit, so I do understand it. But when it's applying to software, it gets into a different realm. So we just need to make sure it works.
Yeah, things end up being much more abstract, and the level of abstraction is much higher compared to
the
voltage levels.
Yeah. So it's good to take things from other industries, but it never maps one-to-one. So how can we adapt it to ours? What can we learn from that and take it?
Yeah. And one area that that we touched upon is generally team and how teams are organized and what's the culture. And culture can, there are different sources of culture within companies. So there is an engineering culture that can be present, but there is a company can have different, just, you know, communication culture, business culture, and so on. Can you give us an example maybe where the engineering culture and testing culture are in place, but they might be clashing with some other culture that is present in the company?
Yeah, too many examples, which is kind of sad, actually, of the clashing thing. I think that culture differences, like if you've been in one of those cultures where it was throw it over the wall, the developer's code, whether you're doing agile or not, I'm not differentiating here, but we're developer's code and then throw it over the wall and say, hey, testers, now you test. Trying to, especially if you've had that for a long time, trying to, because what happens is that when the testers are testing after code is built, it naturally becomes an adversarial kind of relationship, because every time they report a bug, it is attacking the developer's code, right? And so there can be a real personal impact. And then if the developer doesn't fix that bug right away, then the tester can take it as a personal affront. And so that kind of culture is really hard to break down. And I know in the course that we have, we call it holistic testing for agile teams. One of the things we stress is how can you work together? And I find that when developers take it, and this is just one way to kind of try to break that down, is the attitude afterwards is, I didn't know testers could work with us like that. And it's changing people's attitudes to how they can work together. And I think that's an important thing. If you expand that idea of culture. So my years ago, he's retired now, but my husband used to be a salesperson for not software, nothing, a totally different industry. But one day I come home and I was complaining about our salespeople from the company. And I said, he went out and he sold this one person I had an issue with. He went out and sold our thing and promised the customer all of this stuff. There's no way we can deliver it, period. No way. And I was ranting and raving. And my husband said, Janet, you know, follow the money. And so then he proceeded to tell me, which made total sense, was follow the money. What are they being rewarded on? The salespeople are being rewarded on selling. They don't care about good implementation. They cared about making that sale. So they would promise the world. And then it was somebody else's problem. So when we're talking about culture, you can't just talk about the development culture, right? Another company I was working with just lately is the CEO. We had a long discussion and they were having lots of projects going on at the same time. And I kind of said, you need to prioritize a little bit so that the team isn't so divided. He tried to, he worked on it a little bit, but ultimately he couldn't say no to the customers. That's a culture thing. And what happens is it shows up in the development group. They're the ones that are the ones bearing the brunt of the rest of the culture in the organization. So culture is such an important thing. You can't just think about it as a development group. You have to think about it, where's your business coming from? How are you prioritizing that? Who's selling it? Are they selling vaporware? Do they care? could we make the salespeople perhaps be rewarded on successful implementations? Would that change how they sold things? Right? So culture is a huge thing.
Yeah, and that brings us to a topic which is our favorite. It's the feedback loops. And that's exactly as your husband explained. that if the feedback loop is set up in the wrong way, it's not working, then things are going to, you know, diverge and, you know, go places where they shouldn't.
Yeah. And the simplest thing is, if developers are being paid to code and they don't care about quality code, then you have an issue and you can't fix it.
Yeah. And that element about spreading too thin, that's one of the biggest struggles with, you know, managing product and doing product management. And, you know, there is a depth that you have to work on. There are like stability things that you have to prioritize, infrastructure. There are so many things to work on. And spreading too thin is not a formula for success. Absolutely. It has been shown so many companies have demonstrated with so many billions of dollars. And, you know,
but we still try.
Lack of focus, you know, just ends up, you know, nowhere. But recognizing that and adjusting the course. You spoke a bit about that prior to the call. Can you maybe share some of your thoughts on recognizing that moment? Okay, we are spreading too thin. Let's regroup. Let's reprioritize.
Right. And I think that one of the things I try to do is have observers around. Somebody, and it doesn't have to be outside the team. It can be just every once in a while, say, okay, Darko, can you be the observer for this sprint, this iteration, this story? Can you just watch? What do you see happening? And bringing in outside consultants works really well because they see everything without thinking about it. But even from a personal perspective, just taking and having your observation eyes on what is really happening can give you great insight. What I see happening in a lot of teams is they do their retrospectives, but they're stuck in the micro, what's causing them issues for this. And they don't stop and look at it from an outside perspective, you know, step back, look at from the top of the hill and look down. And I think the teams need to practice that a little bit. A lot of teams do self-assessments, and looking at that sort of thing sometimes will help say, look, this used to work, but it's not working anymore. Why are we going down? And looking at that and identifying the problem and then saying, how could we fix that? How can we solve that problem? Because perhaps you've hit that pivot point. What used to work isn't working anymore. And it could be as simple as how are we testing it, which is not simple, but we could stop and think about it. Should we be testing differently? What has changed in our product? What has changed in our organization? Maybe we grew from being a small team of 10 people to being 60 people. Do we have to change how we think about dependencies? Do we have to change how we interact with other groups? And I don't think people stop and take that observation level and look at it from the bigger picture. And it needs to happen.
Yeah. It's not that I have to analyze, but on one hand, it's very hard. On the other time, on the other hand, you have to take the time to do that. But that leads us nicely to the next topic. You worked a lot about the quality assessment of the, you know, process and how companies work and teams. And it's also connected to your upcoming book. So if you can give us that part of the story.
Oh, okay. So quality assessments aren't focused, like when I do a quality assessment and I go in and I look at the processes, I look, talk to the people, I really think about what it is. And we often do assessments based on the practices, you know, as outlined by, you know, choose any methodology you want. Are we doing the practices? But again, it comes back to, are we looking at why we're doing those practices? What is the reason behind it? And what we're trying to do is build in quality. And in theory, that's what everybody wants. And so when you're doing a quality assessment, you're looking at the bigger picture. How are we actually building in quality? How are we thinking about it? And so when I used to do them very informally, once we started going remote, I had to really think about what that meant. And so as I developed this process and made it more formal, and I use that word loosely, formal, started writing it down. And I just thought about how can we make this so that other teams can do it. So I'm working with Selena DeLisi on this, and hopefully we have this book out so people can take our tool, it's just kind of thing, and be able to look at their own team and say, and start asking questions. It's all about asking questions. How are we doing this? Are we still, and what I find is most teams aren't at any one level as such, right? They might be at the beginning, you know, in chaos around some of their testing, but they've got really good planning, right? So there's teams are never in one level. So it's the idea of a maturity model is really doesn't work because teams aren't there. But being able to ask things like, so in our development approach, are we thinking about our quality attributes at the very beginning? Where do we start thinking about them? And starting to think about that sort of thing. I'm hoping that teams will be able to look at it and have those observation views afterwards. So we've developed this little tool, and I use that word loosely too, but the book will be saying what kinds of questions to ask to help you identify where you might want to improve. And that's really the bottom line, is where do you want to improve? Helping you see that.
Yeah, like something that I can't imagine anyone who doesn't need that.
Well, hopefully, but and it's interesting because I think that this is really the first time I've talked about it out loud. So it tells me that I need to work on my 30-second elevator speech a little bit better on this.
It's clear. Maybe it's not 30 seconds, but it's clear. And expected date when it's coming out, where people will be able to find it.
It'll be on LeanPub, and we hope to have it out this summer sometime.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So data range, no set deadline, but sooner than later, but...
Q3. Okay, no deadlines. Well, this was very insightful and interesting, Janet. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us. For the listeners, we'll make sure to include the link to the LeanPub page with the book. And Janet, thank you so much for sharing all this with us.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Microservices architecture is all the rage these days. But do you know what it really means and how to implement it to empower your teams to make the best decision for the problem at hand? On the Semaphore blog, you can learn about microservices and how to take advantage of features like test reports, monorepo, and Docker support to build, test, and deploy your microservice application at scale. Head over to semaphoreci.com/blog for more information. And happy reading!